Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only buffoon appreciation podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual.
Joel Gasson that rhymes with buffoon?
No, not as far as I know, anyway. Maybe at some point in my family lineage there was a changing of names, as sometimes people do when they move across continents or to different countries. They tend to sometimes change last names for various reasons.
Right.
So maybe. Maybe. I don't know. It's possible. But I don't know. Probably not. Probably not in this case.
But I mean, it is now something that I'm going to work in once in a while. So
for sure. Absolutely. We are back from an unintended bye week. We did initially plan to talk last week during the writer's bye week, but then stuff kind of piled up and it wasn't exactly a particularly interesting bye week. So we just said, meh, whatever.
Meh.
A little break here or there isn't bad for anyone.
Even though we actually did have one of the seven pining, being like, hey, I actually missed you guys. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. I know. I was surprised to see that. I didn't think anyone would actually miss us.
Well, we are back. So yeah. Those one of the seven of you that that missed us, we are back and we are ready to rock.
And we are definitely have some other stuff to talk about, as the Riders have finally won a game after Labor Day. The first time since November 2021, they have won a game after Labor Day as they beat the lowly Calgary Stampeders on Friday night at McMahon Stadium. So we'll share our thoughts on that game and what it kind of means in the big picture, and some other news and notes from across the CFL. But yes, John alluded to it. This is a bit of a sort of an inside thing right now on Three Down Nation. I don't know. Some other people may have seen it because it is technically happening in the public domain.
Yes.
I believe it was on. So if you don't listen to the Three Down Nation podcast, it used to be one whole thing where they did the show and then they did the picks at the end. Now they've split it up where they do like just the show where they talk about the news and notes in the CFL. And then a day or two later, the episode with just JC and John Hodge comes out where they do the pick, their picks for the week, both straight up and on the spread like we do on the website. I guess in the comments, which I mean, I don't ever read the comments, on the YouTube video, which by the way, you can also find us on YouTube as well. So if that is your thing, that's where you listen to your podcast. You can still find us there, but you will not see us there.
No, we have not. We have not been brave enough to turn on the webcams just yet.
No. Someone was commenting on the fact that apparently JC Abbott just picks against everyone's team. Like everyone, it's a thing now, apparently, where everyone thinks JC just constantly picks against their team. Or at least I think 7 of 9 fan bases have now accused JC of constantly picking against their team. Which mathematically does not work. But anyway.
No, and in fairness, especially this year for JC, there's been a lot of teams that have played a lot of stretches of some shitty football at times. So it just is kind of happening organically as well. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the follow-up comment to that was that he was not worth listening to, much like some other biased reporters on the site, including Ballantyne, Ryan Ballantyne, of course, Santino, our Ottawa Reblex correspondent out of Brazil, and that apparently me?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I'm not worth listening to. I mean, that's fair. But
you'll be the first to admit that.
Yes, I am apparently also, this is where I was also Gasson the buffoon. Buffoon was spelled wrong. It was like B-A-F. O-N or something.
And Gasson was obviously spelt wrong.
Yes, Gasson was two S, two O's. Which, I mean, so I've been called Hassan before, which I know Jacques still likes to bring up, but Gasson buffoon. And like, okay.
The alliteration in the rhyme is one of those. As soon as you sent that to Greg and myself, I had a quick moment where I'm like, oh, this is sticking.
Yeah.
Like, when you're up here for the Saskatoon Men's Bond spiel, you're gassooned the entire weekend. Like, you know, you're, it's not Gas, it's not Joel, you are gassoon. And I think if we have jerseys made, which I will be in charge of, your name bar is changing.
It's fine. I don't care. I honestly, like, as I said to you, I'm like, I'm not offended that you spelled my name wrong.
Yes.
I'm not offended that you called me a buffoon, because it's not entirely off. I'm a little offended that you called me biased, though.
And the funniest thing is, when you said that to me, before you said that, I'm like, out of all that, the misspelling, buffoon, the thing that is going to piss you off is being accused of being biased.
I get pissed me off isn't really the right word. I mean, it's like,
irritated
wrong.
You?
It's wrong, but I mean, whatever. I mean, if everyone thinks I'm biased, and even like, I think, I know in the past, there have been Rider fans who accused me of being too hard on the team, so I guess there must be... The middle ground must be means I'm doing okay then, I guess.
that's fair. Just like I am a noted Zach hater.
Yes, well, I mean, that is true.
I mean, I like to call it more of a Zach realist, right? At least maybe now, after my stunt at SAS Tel Center last night, I'll be known for that.
Maybe. Surprisingly, John's Twitter account has not been shut down for inappropriate imagery. So I guess with whatever is going on that website now, maybe it's such a thing doesn't exist anymore. I don't know.
No, you know what? It's funny. And I think we all know how I know this, but you can find nudity on Twitter, not Instagram, though.
No. Yeah.
Don't ask me how I know this. We can all just come to the conclusion. But yes, last night, Blades home opener, 8,300 people there. Great vibes. And the funny thing is like, in the WHL, obviously, all things are cyclical, right? The Blades were a wagon last year, kind of expected to be middle of the pack this year, but they come out in front of 8,200, and it's a 9-3 drubbing of Swift Current. So part of that was the Blades said, and I feel like I should also say this, you know, for employment reasons, as I'm probably going to have to explain this to Boss Man Darren, that the Blades had come to me and said, hey, would you be willing to kind of be a bit of a, like a Cameron Hughes of a super fan for the game? And I said, of course I would. Like, give me some tickets, I'm in. So first period, they put me on screen and chugged a beer. That's pretty par for the course for me. The best
you
part,
probably would have done that whether you're on screen or not. So
100%. I would have, if you had told me, like, if you see yourself on screen at SAS Tel Center with a beer in your hand, you have to crush that beer. So I do that. That just comes naturally, no big deal. And the funniest thing was, I had about six or seven. I was sitting with some friends, Ken from my curling team, my buddy Taylor from Work at Ends Toyota, sitting with these guys. And I get lots of texts like, hey, was that you up on the big screen chugging the beer? Now, I know at this point that there's more to come, but they don't. So
this is further evidence, if you haven't already figured it out now, when you see really weird things on the big screen at sporting events, most of them are plants.
Yeah, almost all of them. I let you behind the curtain, almost all of them are, because you have to make sure it's going to work. So Then the second period, unbeknownst to everybody, I was wearing 5 t-shirts, including my own. And so they showed me on screen again.
Good thing
so
they didn't ask you to do that at Barry's game. You'd be, like, just drenched.
Oh, God. Well, that's actually, it was funny. sitting beside Ken, who I curl with, and I said to him, I'm like, listen, if I sweat through the shirt that I brought to the game and into one of the giveaway shirts, I'm giving it to you. Because, like, we curl together, so you feel like you'll be less offended by my sweat. So, anyways, it's all good. I yard off the 4 shirts, and then I had told the Blades, I said, listen, I'll go full tarps off here. Like, and then the plan was to have one of those big novelty chains around me and basically do, like, the Kirk Cousins thing. Mm-hmm. They sold out a novelty chain, so it's just me whipping my shirt off and helicoptering it around, yelling "Go Blades" into a camera. So the beauty is gas. And I haven't posted these on social media yet. I might actually post this on Instagram, largely to embarrass my family. They have, like, Steve Hiscock and his crew, that's the photographers for the Blades and Rush, they had tipped them off to where I would be. So there are some very high quality, like, you can see each individual chest hair. They're so high quality, these photos of me, tarps off, helicoptering my shirt. So I do have to say, to maintain my employment, and I guess some of my dignity, whatever little bit of it I have left. I was a plant. That was agreed upon. It's not like I was so shit-faced that I just took my tarps off. But, hey, I was getting, like, I did that, and then I was, like, running back to grab a drink from the boardroom at Sastel Center and just see some friends of mine, and I had people high-fiving me the whole way. So, you know, hey, I'll give you a discount on your undercoat if you mention me tarps off at Sastel Center.
That's you heard him. You get your undercoating now while you can.
But seriously, it was a ton of fun. Great atmosphere at the Blades game. This team is going to be chaotic in a good way this year. Mm. They're going to score a lot. They're going to give up a lot. So it's going to be stupid fun. You're going to see some lacrosse scores out of the Blades this year.
Some high-fiving was probably going on around Saskatchewan on Friday night. As the Riders finally got off the schneid. Their first win in 7 games. Their first win after Labor Day in a million years. And just a whole lot of good vibes after a very, 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 very necessary win over the Calgary Stampeders.
Yes.
So we'll get into all of that and more. But for John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
I'm going to bring down the vibes here just for a second, Gas. I have a 15-year-old Bowmore. In the glass classy. This week.
Apparently this is a classy episode.
This is a classy episode.
I did not get the memo on that one.
Well, every year, I always have a scotch around this time of year to remember the passing of my good friend Casey Guerin, big scotch aficionado. I always pour two glasses, leave one for him, leave one for me, and then I proceed to drink them both because that's how he would want it. So, 15-year-old
you can't just let the other one sit there forever. So,
well, of course not. Like, no. One of the kids could drink it, right? It kind of looks like apple juice. And I always get a really good bottle of scotch to do this, so I don't want to waste any of that. So, 15-year-old Bowmore. It is smoky. It is oaty. It has a hint of chocolate, but in common terms, it is fucking delicious. If you enjoy scotch, this comes in at around, I think I got this for $120 for the bottle, so real high-class scotch and not too expensive. Very expensive, but not like $500 unnecessary bottle expensive. Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for scotch-ish at a little bit of a lower price point, our friends at Lucky Bastard, of course, do have their single malt, which you and I can attest to thanks to Bryce of Lucky Bastard, is very delicious. Still got that good smoke. They just can't call it scotch because it's not from Scotland, obviously. So
right. And actually, you know what, Gas? I would very much compare this Bowmore to the single malt from Lucky Bastard. It's just we had so much of it the last time we were together. I saw it and I was gonna do it, and then I kind of winced because I'm like, oh, Bryce's backyard. Like, there was I was gonna go for the lower price point, and I'm like,
And the Lucky Bastards bourbon, not bourbon, should be hitting shelves soon as well, too. So keep an eye out for that if bourbon's more your thing than scotch. For me, taking it easy, a nice Sunday afternoon brew on a day that's kind of starting to finally feel like fall. The Nokomis Craft Ales Long Lake Lager. Just a solid beer that tastes like beer and honestly probably one of the best at doing so in the province.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a perfect. I was out of the Hilltops game today, too. This was a... I kept my shirt on there, but it was very much a sporting weekend for me.
Yeah. Sporting weekend for the Riders as well. As they went.
I like the way you use the term sporting. It's like we're British because we're classy now.
Sporting. It was a sporting weekend.
Quite.
As the Saskatchewan Rough Riders traveled to Calgary and came away with a victory over the Stampeders in a game that featured two teams on, I believe, a combined 12-game winless streak. Because I think Calgary was 5, the Riders were definitely 7. So something had to give, unless there was a tie, which thankfully there wasn't for both teams.
Could you imagine? Oh, God.
Yeah.
It looked like there could have been for a while.
It was possible. It was always technically possible. The score wasn't weird enough that it would require some sort of, like, a safety or something to get there. But
yeah,
just a game, frankly, the Riders had to win. If they had lost that game to the Calgary Stampeders, who we can, I think at this point, especially consensusly, all agree are not good.
Yes.
I think it's clear the week before when they did tie Montreal that had to do more with Montreal kind of going through some things the last few weeks, which probably isn't the worst thing for them to try and, you know, they to hit their little bump in the road if they want to repeat as Grey Cup champions.
Well, and you got to think in Montreal, with the playoffs already clinched, they're kind of taking one from Winnipeg's playbook and kind of taking the foot off the gas now before stepping it back down when the season comes in.
It's
late,
possible.
So.
But anyway, I think that had more to do with Montreal than Calgary's. Calgary scored around and played about the same kind of game they normally did. Montreal just didn't quite have enough in the tank that day, I guess. And so the Riders do what they have to do. And there was some very impressive moments in this game, and I think that you could really tell the tide turned right before half.
Yeah.
They got the ball back with, I believe, a buck 12 left. And there was, you know, they had a few options there. They could just kind of play conservative and see what happens, maybe take a few plays, kick the field goal, head to halftime. But instead, they just grabbed the ball and they went for it.
Yeah, love that.
And they went for it. And I mean, in the past, I believe they've done this. And like, they are generally tried to be aggressive on offense for a very variety of reasons throughout the season. They haven't been able to win at times, or they just haven't been able to execute it at times. But it worked out. And I think that was sort of the light turning on moment where it was like, okay, they have maybe finally gotten over, you know, sort of the mental hurdle, the hump that was kind of holding them back from winning football games, because that was very much a statement drive that you thought, okay, here we go. The bounces finally went their way. You know, they had the, you know, there was sort of the dumb play earlier in the game where Trevor Harris's one incompletion in the entire half just happened to bounce off Demario Hewson's face. And at that point, I thought, that's normally intercepted.
Yes.
So they finally caught a break that they haven't gotten in a long time. Same with Rene Paredes missing the PAT, which also helped avoid a tie. And so it felt like the pieces were finally falling into place. And that drive was really impressive. They came all the way down. The only thing I didn't necessarily like about it was running on first and goal, because they didn't get in. And if Trevor Harris didn't sneak into the end zone on that next play, that was the end of the half. They weren't getting any points out of that, and that would have been a big uh-oh. So luckily for them, Trevor Harris got into the end zone. They held the 24-9 lead, and it felt like everything was going to be good from there on out, and they should have won that football game with ease.
Certainly, and you're right, that turning point of Harris making it, and I get it, like, the run game was working so well for them.
But at a certain point when there's, like, fewer than 10 seconds on the clock, unless you are, like, 100% sure you're going to get this in, you should probably throw the football.
Oh, certainly. You gotta stop the clock there. You gotta be able to take a couple cracks at the, or at least take two cracks at the end zone and have time left for your field goal, right? Yeah. So it was, you're right. That's something that typically has gone against the team this year, but that first half was real impressive, right? Yeah. Like, they kind of took Calgary's first shot there as they came out in the first.
They do sort of Winnipeg-ish in the sense that they do okay with their scripted drive.
Yes.
And then from there, they just generally can't figure things out at times.
Well, especially because I think it is fair to say Jake Mayer is the worst full-time starting quarterback in the league.
Yeah, and I don't. It's a weird situation. Like, I don't think very highly of Jake Mayer. I don't think he's at his best, he's fine.
Yes.
At his worst, he's a hindrance to you winning football games. But I also don't think their offense is doing them any favors.
No.
I think there is equal harm from Jake Mayer and Dave Dickinson's offense at this point to that team.
Certainly, and the old chicken before the egg argument, right? Is Dave Dickinson running this oddly conservative offense because Jake Mayer can't throw, or is Jake Mayer not executing Dickinson's terrible offense, right?
The answer may be yes.
Right? You'll never know, unless they go out and spend a bunch of money or find a way to...
Well, and I think Dave Dickinson is also caught in sort of the scenario of many head coaches before him have fallen into when your team sucks, and that's just when you're spiraling, you just tend to make dumber and worse decisions and get more and more conservative instead of trying to push forward to get out of it.
Right, and I mean, Calgary does own their first round pick this year, so with Curtis Rourke sitting there, it might not be the worst thing. If they're going to pick a year to suck...
Though at this point, I don't know if Curtis Rourke's going to be in the CFL next year, the way he's lighting it up in Indiana.
Him moving to Indiana might have absolutely... Like, I get it, when he was playing at small schools, you're thinking, he's coming to the NCAA, or he's coming from the NCAA to the CFL, but the second he goes to Indiana and is doing good things for Indiana... I don't think, like his older brother, he might end up directly in the NFL, unlike his older brother.
So, and then Then this is where things got kind of a little hairy for me.
Yeah.
Not to think of hair too much today, but their second half...
Just you wait till I send you those photos, the professional photos from last night.
The second half, obviously Calgary comes out, scores the opening half touchdown again. It's like, okay. And then the Riders respond, and then they kept going back and forth. And it's not like this defense to sort of let a team hang around, especially a team like the Calgary Stampeders. It's a moment where you would have liked to have seen the defense step up and make a play to end that game. Like, that's all they needed. Like, the margin from that going from a close game to a blowout was very thin.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
For Calgary, and they only had four possessions in the entire second half because both teams were only running the football because, one, it was working for the Riders, so why would they stop? And two, for Calgary, that's more or less all they can do, that and throw to Reggie Bagleton. So, you know, time was of the essence for Calgary, and they ran out of it. And, you know, if you could just get the one stop, that game probably was over midway whenever that stop happened, quite frankly. And they just couldn't get it, which was, I think, kind of concerning. Like, I don't think it's like a hit the panic button on the defense or anything like that, especially with Roland Milligan not at the game for the birth of his new child. But it's a thing where it's like, okay, you got the W. That's good. It's important. But I don't know if I'm ready to proclaim much about it other than the fact that they won and they got some help, unfortunately, for Rider fans, cover years, from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who beat the Edmonton Elks to give them a 3-point cushion on that final playoff spot right now. But a win over Calgary to me doesn't necessarily suggest to me that they're back in Grey Cup contention or anything of that like. They're just solidly in the mix now for a playoff spot. Had they convincingly beat Calgary, like if they beat the brakes off them on the scoreboard as well, that I would have been like, okay, this team might be back.
Yeah, especially with Raquel Armstead now in the mix. Now, before we talk about him, the concern for me is, you know, the offense elevated their play. The offense knew that they're like, okay, we got to go out. We got to step in. We got to stop this funk, right? Yeah. It's almost like when a starting pitcher, when you get your best starting pitcher on the mound, you're playing baseball, you know you've got a chance to win. And the offense was essentially that. We're going to go out. We're going to give you a chance to win. And the fact that the defense couldn't elevate after the second half, right? When you
like it was 24-9 at half.
Right.
Like, okay, and they scored like once, and then that should have been like, okay, close this down. And that didn't necessarily mean they had to create turnovers or get a pick six or anything like that. Just stop them on second down.
a two and out, like one two and out in that second half, as you said, the way that the teams were running the ball out of necessity and with the lead, one two and out is probably enough to stop the bleeding and keep this, you know, a more respectable score, right? I could see, you know, you're worn down, you're tired by the end of the game. You're always going to give it those garbage time touchdowns. But the fact is, when they needed them through that entire third quarter, they asked the defense to step up and play at the level the offense was at, and they couldn't do that. And that's been an issue for this team, you know, all year is, you know, the offense is, it's bizarro world. The offense is now winning them games while the defense is unable to keep stepping up.
It's one or the other. They're like, both units haven't. There's been very few times this year where you could say both units contributed equally to the win.
Right, 100%. But I mean, to me, it was also evidence that, you know, how big Milligan is for this team.
Yeah.
Right?
No question.
Especially
when Amari Henderson needs to replace him.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, you're basically going from your number one defender to your depth guys, right? So, again, I'm not ever suggesting that Roland Milligan should have, you know, should have played that game.
Like, especially if there was any game for him to miss, it was that one.
Exactly. Right. You're playing the weakest opponent with a noodle arm quarterback. It was almost a good reminder though, of how valuable he's been to this team and how much they need him going forward. Right. Yep. But I'm with you. I think I will say with Armstead in the backfield, I'm not worried about the offense anymore. Like,
no, here's the thing. We'll get into Armstead himself in a second, but we've seen this once already this year, right? I mean, Frankie Hixon came in his first game against Montreal. He ran for like 100 yards in the first half, and then for whatever reason, they ignored him in the second half.
Right.
And he never really picked up another game after. I think he had like a 70-yard game somewhere in the stretch after that, but otherwise he's been in like the 30s and 40s, and nothing too remarkable since then. So, okay, Armstead had a great game. We've seen a running back have a great game under this offense before. Now, granted, Armstead is a little more proven considering he came before he was released by Ottawa. I believe he was like fourth in the league in rushing.
Yes.
So he's obviously a little more of a known quantity in terms of production this season. But still, I mean, it takes a number of factors for this running game to keep rolling. Number one, a offensive line that is being held together by duct tape and prayers has to keep producing enough for them to do it. And two, Mark Mueller needs to continue to stick with it enough for it to be productive. So those are two things that are still kind of dicey about how well that'll work. And of course, now teams have seen Armstead in this offense and how it's going to work. He said he only knew about 4 to 7 plays, which is understandable considering he came in only that week. But with a running back, you can do that compared to a quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. Running back, it's like, hey, you know, you're going to open up a hole to the left and go make
inside zone left, inside zone right, block.
Yeah, exactly that. Now, speaking of the offensive line, listening to the pregame show with a friend of the show, Dave Thomas and Luke Mullender, they were mentioning that this was the first game this season that the guard center guard trio has been the same combination of three guys.
Yeah,
in back to back weeks.
I'd believe that. I think they've ran through like 14 guys this year, they've said so far.
Injuries.
When at the start of the year, the team was saying they needed to use about 8 of them, and they've used 14. So
yeah, which creates a problem, right? And you could tell it, too. I think that problem was more obvious with A.J. Ouellette back there.
Yeah.
I like A.J. Ouellette. I love his wrestling background. I love his marketability. He seems, from all accounts, seems like a good teammate, good human. But he needs an offensive line to not just create
Plumlee and Heating
goals.
Probably loves him, too.
Right. Right? He needs not just an offensive line to create holes. He needs an offensive line to give a push to be successful, while Armstead is not that guy. He's the guy. He's like Hickson, but better. Because
he's a better version of Frankie Hickson. He's got some power to his game, but he's got some speed, too.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we saw out of Ouellette was, okay, he's got power, but he's just not fast enough to get through what they need right now.
No, certainly. And especially with a patchwork offensive line. So, and you said, you know, in our preamble, you're thinking, and I think you're correct, that Armstead being signed is proof that Ouellette's probably done for the year with his injury.
I'd be surprised if he came back, Maybe for like a playoff run or something, but.
Right.
And then you could bring him in then as like a second down blocking back kind of thing, maybe, but. Yeah.
Right. Or even you'd basically have him in a fullback role.
Yeah.
Right. We give another wrinkle to this offense, which I think is what they need. Right. So, but Armstead to me coming in is, you know, this is the kind of guy that deserves a second chance.
Yeah.
He is not irredeemable. He's not a Garrett Marino.
No, he did, you know, sort of dumb, undisciplined football stuff, but he wasn't a bad person about it.
As
far as we know.
Right, exactly. Like, maybe he was abrasive in the room. You know, obviously he's got a temper. He's a bit of a hothead on the field, and that can hurt you and can cost you football games. But to me, unlike being a scumbag like Chad Kelly or a psychopath like Garrett Marino, that's something that can be coached out and generally comes with maturity, right? Mm-hmm. And
sometimes, you know, sometimes you need sort of that wake-up call of,
right.
I mean, okay, like, I assume he had NFL aspirations. He probably had a cup of tea in the NFL at one point. Didn't work out, came to the CFL, thought he could be, you know, like some guys come to the CFL thinking they can be all that, and then he was doing really well. So it became a thought of, okay, you know, I'm really good, I can do this, and then, you know, and then some other, you know, other thoughts get into your head, and you start acting up and whatever. And then it's like, okay, you need that humbling experience of getting cut. And then you can say, okay, I know now, probably if I screw up again, this is it for my professional football career, unless you want to go play in Europe or something.
Play in Europe or play like the Arena Football League or something, right? Like you're not quite good enough for the best league in the world, and you're too much of a detriment to your team in the second best league in the world. Next thing you know, you're working at least in the CFL, you can still make this a full-time job, full-time career. So it's I don't hate taking a second chance at a guy like that.
It's obviously easy to say in retrospect that at least through one game it was a smart move. I still have my trepidations about it, my thoughts about it, because, you know, had things been going well or things kind of been middle of the road, I could see maybe taking the chance on him.
Yeah.
Considering how poorly things had gone for seven straight games, I was like, this is a pretty big roll of the dice to bring in a guy with sort of this kind of reputation at this point, because it was going to go one of two ways. It's going to go either the way we saw on Friday night, where he plays really well, for the most part, keeps things to, you know, within the lines of what's going to draw a flag and what doesn't. Because
Calgary, you could tell Calgary was targeting.
Yeah, it was early in the game, like they fell on him to try and test him, and he got up and he was going to, and then he didn't.
So right,
that was good to see, and you still want the guy to play like himself. Like obviously, he is a guy who likes to be yappy, who likes to get involved in that sort of stuff on the field, and that's fine, as long as you can keep it sort of within the parameters of what the league suggests is fine, right?
Yes.
So as long as you do that and you can produce, that's cool. I have no problem with that. I'm not like a guy who says, I'll just shut up, drop the ball, and line up again. If, you know, saying a few things and trying to get under your opponent's skin a little bit is something that helps you play better and gets you in the zone, then go for it. Just stay within the lines of what's acceptable. So it was either going to be what we saw on Friday, or it was going to completely blow up and be awful. I don't think there was ever a scenario where he's just kind of fine.
Well, no, I think you're right. And I hope that continues, that, you know, in a game where maybe he's seeing a few less touches, right? In a game where Trevor Harris is able to exploit, you know, some soft zones or something like that.
Trevor Harris is probably not going to have another game this year, really. He only completes 18 passes. Attempts 18 passes, sorry.
Right, and then makes sure. And then the thing I love about Trevor Harris, though, just joking, but that's like the easiest game I've ever had. Like, I only had to throw the ball.
Yeah, two incompletions. Like, one was off a guy's face, and the other just kind of fell in the dirt to no one. So.
Right? And his humor about it at the end was shows, I think, just the monkey being off the back. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't want to shout from the rooftops that, this team is back, but you could definitely tell in the levity and everything of the guys after the game, especially a veteran like Trevor Harris making jokes about, it's like the easiest win I've ever had, right? That's generally showing that maybe that monkey is off the shoulders about, you know, the not winning after Labor Day, and maybe that noise will go away. I still think you have to beat Ottawa next week to say...
Yeah, like, well, we can expect they'll beat Calgary one more time.
Yes.
Beat Calgary one more time. One of the other games in there, they'll probably pick up at least two more wins this year. If they can get that third win out of what's left this year, you know, and I think that starts with if they can beat Ottawa this week, because Ottawa's coming off a loss against Montreal. Drew Brown looks banged up again. They've kind of slid a little bit the last few weeks.
Yeah.
As sort of where they were. So I think they are very gettable right now, especially on the road. So this is a scenario where there is a wounded team coming into your barn. If you can pounce on them early, take out their will to win, and, you know, basically win that game fairly easily, like, you don't have to blow them out by like 35 points, but if it's a 10-14 point win, that's probably where it should be based on sort of the scenario where they're at. If they can do that, then I'll say, okay, this team is progressing once again in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, Ottawa just 2-4 on the road so far this season as well. The Riders 3-3 at the friendly confines of Mosaic Stadium. So it is one that they need. I think you're right. I think there's two more wins in this, the remainder of the schedule, but to really get that confidence going. And what I'm going to be curious to see, though, is Armstead's demeanor.
Yes.
Against his former team.
He's been saying the right things. Like, he's been saying all the right things, and I'm sure he'll say all the right things leading up this week. It'll be very different when the game actually gets on when you know actually start playing. Probably helps that the game's here, not in Ottawa.
Yep.
And I don't know, like, we obviously don't know for sure. I imagine any sort of beef or hard feelings, if there are any, aren't necessarily towards the players on the field. But you still want to kind of show it against the team that, you know, let you go, especially mid-season.
Well, and the other thing too with all of this is the only thing that I would say worries me about Armstead is he comes from a well-coached team.
Yep.
right? It's one thing to be a loose cannon on a Chris Jones coach team.
Yeah.
Right.
Or a Craig Dickinson coach team.
Yeah, exactly.
Or apparently now a Dave Dickinson coach team where they're fighting in the locker room after the game.
Yeah, exactly. Right. you have those. If you come from one of those cultures, you redeem yourself with a Corey Mace. Like, for the mistakes that Corey Mace has made, this man knows a locker room. This man knows how to motivate men and get the best out of guys. Right.
Yep.
Are they still going to make mistakes? Of course. Right. Yeah. Is he making mistakes as a rookie coach? Of course. Right. Yep. But it doesn't seem like discipline's the issue, which is comical after 3 years of Craig Dickinson. Basically, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas, right? So,
shucks, guys, let's go bowling.
Right? Season's on the line. Let's go bowling. God, I almost forgot about that sometimes, but it will be interesting to see. I am a little worried again because he came from well coached organization. I wish they had the breathing room that they could just play well against Ottawa, but no, I think, you know, Ottawa's reeling. You're at home.
They're lucky this week that Edmonton plays Winnipeg again, who I think have they figured it out. They're back on top in the West. I don't see the West not running through Winnipeg again this year. So
the luckiest thing that has happened to Winnipeg has been the injuries to Adam Big Hill, because Gauthier is at this point in his career, better linebacker.
Jones is pretty good too, with turning out.
Right, exactly. And Willie Jefferson apparently has, to a degree, found a fountain of youth. He's been far more consistent this year. He's not the dominant threat he was, but he is certainly better than he's been in previous years. And the fact that there's an actual backup quarterback now in Jake Dalla-Galla, right? So it's weird.
And I think what also helped Winnipeg is BC hit the skids, and then they've just been kind of been weird since.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, BC's...
Like,
BC's
this was there for BC to take, and then they've made a lot of weird... Like, pulling of Nathan Rourke right before after scoring... Like, there was just a whole lot of weird stuff going on in BC lately that I can't quite wrap my head around.
No, and then you've got that buzz around the room of, like, who starts? Is it VA? And then you've got quarterback issues in Edmonton, right?
So, anyway, specifically, but, like, I think it's plausible. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's plausible Winnipeg could beat Edmonton again. So then if the Riders beat Ottawa, they're more or less locked into third in the West.
Right, pending some wild, wild finish by Hamilton.
Yeah, and even then, I don't know if the numbers are there for them to cross over if the Riders win again.
But I mean, the Riders...
It's tight, but...
One win after Labor Day the last few years.
Obviously, if the Riders lose, then yes, the Hamilton door is still open for them. But I Hamilton's probably still chasing Toronto at this point, quite frankly.
Yeah, certainly, because Toronto has fallen. Speaking of dressing rooms, what an amazing thing when Chad Kelly comes back and Toronto falls apart.
They've just kind of continued on where they've been the entire year.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, they're getting better quarterback play right now, but their record hasn't really skyrocketed any sort of way. So
no, certainly, this whole year is so weird.
Yep,
and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the conversation. I mean, we're going to be getting into the sort of year now, like. There was the weird piece on CFL.ca of power rankings for MOP. Like, no one knows who the most outstanding player in the league is this year.
No.
I think, you know, right now, the default may go to Cody Fajardo just because he's the quarterback on the best team, but I don't really feel like it's actually him. I feel like from a Rider perspective, the nominee's likely Roland Milligan Jr., but
agreed.
He's kind of... I mean, the special teams angle of that obviously helps out his cause overall. He's kind of faded off over the last number of weeks compared to his start. But naturally, you actually want a defensive back pretty much with no stats because that means no one's throwing the ball at him.
Certainly.
Which is a good thing. But in terms of acquiring votes for these sorts of awards, generally you need numbers to back it up. And because
With large portions of the CFL media just looking at fancy numbers. And
because the CFL doesn't. Like, the NFL has stats of all that stuff, but, like, how many times the guy's actually thrown at and all that, and sometimes it's like, this guy hasn't been thrown at in two games. Like, you can see that number and it exists, right?
Right, exactly.
So if that number is there, you could easily back it up, but at the same time, you know, the other only other option I can maybe argue, and he's never going to get it, it would be Logan Ferland, because he's played every position on the offensive line this year.
Right, but
otherwise, no one else really stepped up.
As much as I hate to say it, nobody's voting an offensive lineman for most outstanding player of anything, even though it should be a thing.
Absolutely.
It's like, I remember Greg Easterbrook used to do the Monday morning quarterback on ESPN.com. I mean, and those were like word salads at the very, like, he makes Marshall Ferguson look like a prompt and tight writer. But one of his big things was there should be every league should have the quarterback, wide receiver, running back MVP, and then everywhere else MVP, like two awards at the end. And I know the NFL does that a bit with, you know, offensive player of the year and defensive player of the year, and so do we. But there almost needs to be a, okay, got your offensive player of the year, you got your defense player of the year, you got the player of the year that comes from everybody else, just so these guys get recognition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is the most outstanding offensive line award, but it's mostly a lifetime achievement award at this point because, I mean, and I don't blame anyone for this. Like, it is hard to keep track of, you know, the play on your own, the team you cover's own offensive line, let alone the entire league. So, to me, that's an award that probably shouldn't be voted on by the media.
No, but like you said, it is a lifetime achievement. Yeah. But if it wasn't for the two doinks, I would start building the Sergio for MOP case, but...
I think about halfway through the year in Winnipeg, he was easily their candidate. But I think Tyrell Ford and Brady Oliveira have passed him at this point.
Yes.
But he's probably still third on their list.
Should be first.